The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You're joining We the People Radio. Bill's standing up because he doesn't like the chair I picked.
No, I don't.
Yeah. I forgot you don't like that chair. Oh, my gosh. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And if we're not all together, we don't have all our components because Bill's the fun.
I need that other set of headphones there. These are malfunctioning.
Oh. Wow, you're just malfunctioning all over the place.
I know it.
What the heck?
Difficulties.
And without Bob, we don't have any good music, so. and everyone likes that part. That's their favorite part. You know, just in case you missed our program last week, I know we've done a bunch of shows about the VA, and last week's program was actually about good things that are happening at the VA. I just thought I'd give you a little follow-up for those of you who were listening. Our guest, Scott Blackburn, actually, he made amazing strides on behalf of our North State veterans last week. We've got all sorts of good things going on. We're looking into some issues that are happening and lots of things like travel pay and distance to appointments. There are a lot of people who wind up driving, you know, to Sacramento to get the results of an MRI or something like that. That's just silly. So he has a rural task force working on some stuff for our guys and gals up here. So that's kind of exciting. Stay tuned on that one. So today we're shifting topics. We're going from big government to I don't know what we call it.
World chaos.
World chaos. There you go. That's a good way to describe it, because we're talking about the threat of Islam, and the website that Peter Friedman has is actually islamthreat.com. Peter Friedman, he's been studying and lecturing on the threat of Islam to America for over 40 years. He maintains a thorough collection of Qurans and English translations, beginning with George Sale's translation in 1734. Each one's been studied and researched and compared to other documents, variations, and translations. He's basically, he knows everything. We know nothing, so we'll do very little talking.
I'm hoping he can decode what the heck's going on in the world today.
I mean,
it seems like every other day we're hearing of another
more chaos.
Atrocity. Yeah.
He wrote an article, and you know, I need to ask him the date, but it was called Barack Hussein Obama and His Middle East Connections. And this was quite a while back. And interestingly enough, pretty much everything in the article is or has happened. So I guess we'll label him with the air quotes title of prophet as well. Mr. Friedman, how's that?
I am humbled by your introduction, and it's just great to be back with you. It seems like every 2 years, I wish it were sooner.
Well, I do too, and you know, it's kind of weird. I was looking at that. You were on in October 2014, October 2012, August 2014, and here we are in July 2016. It's totally weird. I didn't do it on purpose. You need to email me more.
Well, there you go. I can certainly do that. I am going to send you a copy of my book. I sent you an email, I guess it was last night. They'll give you the address. It's on CD. You can also get it on my website, islamthreat.com, and it says 36 articles by Peter Friedman over on the right-hand side of the page, and it is for sale very economically off the website, too. It comes on a CD, so you put it in the computer, or you can take it to some place like Kinko's or FedEx Office, Staples, and just have them print it out.
Nice.
Yeah, 220 pages and 36 articles.
Holy cow, because you've been doing I don't remember how we first met you, but I do believe it was through your writing again.
And that is correct.
And through the Tea Party, I'm sure. So I don't know where you want to go today. We don't have an agenda on this because obviously we haven't translated anything except your schedule into our time zone. that's our big claim to fame.
You know, based on everything that's going on, And, you know, I've been sitting here and literally studying the convention, and I will be eagerly studying the convention this week. But what has fascinated me was the fact that Obama, in the middle of apparently Mike Pence's acceptance speech, was entertaining a bunch of Muslims for a Muslim holiday in the White House at the same time.
Oh, big shock.
And what kills me is that he comes up with this same BS propaganda every time he's involved with the Muslim community. And it started out on June 4, 2009, when he was in Cairo at Al-Azhar University. And it extended all the way up to a few months ago when he visited the mosque in Baltimore that has been associated factually. I mean, you can look that up, with a number of Muslim terrorists that have come out of there, Anwar al-Awlaki, who used to preach there and stuff. And I have in front of me, and I've got all my books open in front of me, of course, Sharia law, the Quran, Bukhari's hadith. So I'm ready for you.
Yeah, you're starting to scare me.
Well, what fascinates me is that, again, Obama launched into this rhetoric a couple of days ago about how Islam has always been a part of America's heritage since our founding, and it's just absolutely factually wrong. And when you go back, which I just did yesterday, and printed out again his transcript for his speech at the mosque in Baltimore, I'm just struck by either his abject ignorance of Islam, or there is some other explanation. But he starts out here, for example, in the middle of this transcript, it says, "For more than," and I'm quoting, "for more than 1,000 years, people have been drawn to Islam's message of peace." And again, he just said this a couple of days ago, and I quote, "And the very word itself, Islam, comes from the Arabic word salam, meaning peace." And that is factually bull.
Yeah, because we've had other people on, and it means subjugate or something. Isn't it something bad?
Islam means, in Arabic, Islam means submission.
Oh, there you go. I knew it was something bad.
And it means submission to the will of Allah. A Muslim is one who submits. So you've got to ask yourself, is this man just ignorant, or is this abject propaganda? And then he goes on and he says, and here is another fact, and I'm quoting, "Here is another fact. Islam has always been part of America. Starting in colonial times, many of the slaves brought here from Africa were Muslim. And even in their bondage, some kept their faith alive." Unquote. And it fascinates the heck out of me that Obama is descendant from a tribe in Kenya who used to enslave other black Africans, and they would sell them to the Muslim slave traders two or three hundred years ago, who in turn sold them to the British, the French, the Dutch, the Portuguese. That's how they wound up coming into our hemisphere. So they were forced to convert, because that's exactly what the Quran requires, convert or die. And these people converted to Islam to try and save themselves from the Muslim slave traders, and this is all throughout the Quran and the Hadith. As a matter of fact, the contempt that Muhammad had for the black community and black Africans is in the Hadith itself, where he refers to them as the raisin heads. You
wow.
You can't make this stuff up. And what fascinates me is for the last 4 years, I think, 3 to 4 years at least, every time I do a presentation, I do not have Muslims that show up anymore. I used to early on, and then we would get into a debate, and I would read directly from the Quran and the Hadith. And they could not refute it. They couldn't argue it because that's what it says. So when you have, for example, our president who propagandizes the American public by saying that Islam means peace, it's a religion of peace, it's been hijacked by radicals, that is it's just garbage. It is just garbage. For God's sake, read the book. And nobody bothers to read the book. I attended an interfaith dialogue, if you will. And that's nonsense, of course, because a dialogue in the Socratic method means there's two equal parties who are conversing. Well, if you are from the Islamic side, there is no dialogue. It's our way or the highway.
Right.
And I wrote a commentary on my visit to a Presbyterian church in Lafayette, probably 3 or 4 years ago. And it was very interesting because there was this Las Vegas lounge act that appeared there. These three guys, they bill themselves out as the Three Amigos. And you have a pastor, a Christian pastor, a very liberal Jewish rabbi, and you have this imam from Pakistan. And I was sitting there in the audience, and the first thing that caught my eye or my ear was when the imam mentioned the fact that there were 6,150 verses in the Quran. Well, he's patently wrong. There's 114 chapters or surahs, and there's 6,247 verses. So where the extra three came from, I don't know. Maybe those are the satanic verses that Salman Rushdie was mentioning. So in the meantime, they're sitting there, and they're going through this whole thing, and they're buddy-buddy, you know, doing this Las Vegas lounge act in front of 200 people that were there in the church. And then they ask for questions. And the first question that I asked from the audience was directed to the pastor and the rabbi. And I said, either of you gentlemen, have you ever read the Quran? And they both responded, no. I said, then how do you know what the imam is telling you about Islam is true? Well, we're taking his word for it. Now, that just didn't sound very scientifically empirical to me. Anyway, I was then very shortly afterwards asked to leave, and I was escorted out.
Oh, just for those,
oh, really?
Just for that question, huh?
Just for that question, I was escorted out as a troublemaker.
So much for that dialogue now, there.
Now, here's something else that's really interesting. When you go back to the transcript from the mosque in Baltimore, Obama makes the following statement, and I quote, Jefferson and John Adams had their own copies of the Quran. Okay, if you go onto Google and you will Google a picture of Keith Ellison, the Congress critter from up in Minnesota where Dearborn is, and you Google him taking his oath of office in 2006 as a congressperson, being administered by Nancy Pelosi, you will discover that his left hand is on a two-volume set of the Quran. If you go to Article 6 of the Constitution, that is a complete and total violation of the congressional oath because you are taking an oath to support and defend our Constitution, which is completely contradicted by the Quran, Hadith, and Sharia law as man-made law versus divine law. So I got a hold of Nancy Pelosi's office, and I said, okay, I said, what is the story here with Ellison taking his oath of office on this two-volume set of the Quran? And her response was back to me that, oh, well, that set of the Quran came out of Thomas Jefferson's library in Monticello, which really indicates that he had a profound respect for Islam. And I said, you are an ignorant SOB. You
and,
are a
and
moron.
We've all said that so many times.
And you are and you are probably the subject of the public school system because you have no idea what the facts are. Here are the facts, and you will find them on my website under Jefferson and the Muslims. And in fact, David Barton and Glenn Beck did their show based upon what I have on my website. Down in Santa Barbara, at the Karpolis Manuscript Library, David Karpeles, in his manuscript collection, and I've been lecturing for him since 1983, he has the original letter that was sent by Jefferson and John Adams in 1785. October 21st was signed by Adams, and Jefferson signed it in Paris on October 25th, 1785. And it was a letter that was supposed to be delivered to our envoy, to the Pasha in Tripoli. And if you remember your Marine Corps hymn, right, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of
Tripoli.
There you go. In the letter, and you can pull it up on my website, Jefferson and the Muslims, it's a three-page letter, and Jefferson and Adams were getting very frustrated with the North African Muslims, who the media would like to call the Barbary Pirates, take the word Muslim out of there, were grabbing our merchant ships, and they were holding our crews and merchant ships for ransom. So the letter now goes to Captain Lamb, L-A-M-B, who delivers it to the Pasha of the Caliphate in Tripoli, Libya. And question number seven, there were eight questions. Question number seven specifically asks, by what principles of their religion, meaning Islam, do they feel that they can enslave and grab our ships and crews until they enter into a treaty, okay, with us? And I'm paraphrasing it. You can read it verbatim for yourself. That's question seven, comes right out of the letter. So up until 1785, Jefferson and Adams knew zip about Islam. There was no Islam going on here in America. Nobody had a clue. Now, the two-volume set that was in Jefferson's library was a set published in 1765 in London, and it was the English translation by George Sale, a Brit who did the very first English translation in 1734. And if you want to read that, it's also on my website under Quran. I have a whole bunch of them there that are legitimate ones. So what happened was Jefferson wrote to Adams, because Adams was our ambassador to London, and he says, hey, I got to find out about these people and what they believe. He says, can you get me a copy of whatever their religious text is? So Adams gets this copy, two-volume, leather-bound set, and he sends it to Thomas Jefferson, and that's how it wound up in Jefferson's library in Monticello. So all of this garbage that is put out here by the other side is propaganda. They make Joseph Goebbels look sane and well-adjusted.
And they use a lot of his techniques. We've got to take a really quick break here, Peter. We will be right back. I hope folks take a second if you happen to be near your computer, whether you're listening live or on the archive. We are at wethepeopleradio.us. You'll find all the information about Peter Friedman and his link to his website, islamthreat.com. We'll be back with him. He's here for 2 hours, so we're going to learn a lot today.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over, but you all body and soul, then it's just your body, then they go. What shall we do about them?
In time's fair now, people do the poker, dominance, submission,
radio.
This New Year's Eve was the final barrier,
dominance,
submission,
radio.
We took you up and we put you in the backseat,
dominance,
submission,
radio.
From year to year, we looked up for the venture,
dominance,
submission,
radio superior,
dominance, submission,
dominance.
Not to be confused with peace. So it would translate into dominance in Islam, actually,
right,
if we were going to be official about it.
Hey, Peter, well, I have a question for you. You know, you talked about the copy of the Quran that Thomas Jefferson had and Ms. Pelosi's misunderstanding of why he had it. Is there evidence to show they had a true understanding of what Islam really was about?
You mean Jefferson?
Or Jefferson, yes.
Sure, absolutely. Here's a fact. When Jefferson was president in 1805, Jefferson finally got fed up again with our ships and crews being grabbed and enslaved and held for ransom over there in North Africa. And the very first conflict that America ever got involved in was our conquest of the Barbary pirates and the North African Muslims. That was in 1805. Thomas Jefferson sent six frigates over there. And if you want to read some history of John Paul Jones, he was involved earlier than that. And what's interesting is that is the very first use by America of what was then the new creation of the Fleet Marines, who were called Leathernecks. You know why they were called Leathernecks? Because if you don't know, here's an answer to a Jeopardy question. Could win you a lot of money. The Marines were called Leathernecks for the simple reason that they knew that the Muslims liked to cut heads off as required by the Quran, especially in Book 8, verse 12. And what the Marines were issued were these large, heavy leather collars. And they wore them around their necks when they were fighting the Muslims.
No kidding.
Wow, there's a piece of relevant current history.
There you go. Little obscure fact. You know, you got to do the research, and I've been researching this stuff for years and years and years, and that's why every time I hear somebody like Barack Obama come out with this propagandizing, it just waves red flags and makes me, as Meg Ryan said in the movie French Kiss, absolutely crazy. People in America, they're too damn lazy to do research, and they cannot suspend their disbelief. And if you read my treatise that I wrote on the psychology of Muslim atrocity, disbelief in this country is just amazing to me. People do not want to believe that another ideology that is masquerading as a religion to get religious tolerance could possibly be based on these religious obligations to subjugate and slaughter anybody who resists them. And it's right there in the book. Just read the book. And I have the books open right now. I've got Reliance of the Traveler, which is Sharia law. Anybody can buy this on the internet. I recommend it wholeheartedly. Read it for yourself. And here is all of the information on jihad. Obama came out months ago and was talking about the definition of jihad, and he was absolutely wrong. And the only analogy I can make is like the Nazis at Auschwitz, and they put all the Jews in France and in Poland and Romania and elsewhere, Austria, and put them in these cattle cars, especially during the winter. No food, no bathroom facilities, nothing, and they shipped them off to Auschwitz, and they stopped and opened up the doors to the cattle cars, and the Nazis just looked at them and said, my God, after that long, horrible trip, would a nice hot shower be good?
Right, right. Now,
And they went willingly.
Now, I read just, on some of your stuff there, the relationship the Muslims had with Nazi Germany. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, unbelievably, the Arabs have always had a relationship with anybody that was against the Jewish community, because this is what is in the Quran, and this is why Muslims hate Jews. It's right there. You can read it for yourself. If you go to my website and go to Quran, the very first thing that will come up is my Quranic index to all the hatred, terror, and intolerance that's in the Quran. But the problem there is that historically, Muhammad, from about 600 to 610, he lived from 570 to 632 A.D., so in other words, 600 years after the birth of Jesus, and he went to the tribe, the Qurayza, who lived in the Jewish tribe that lived in Mecca. And he had grown up in Mecca, and he heard all of the New Testament stories from the Christians that lived there and from the Jewish tribe that lived in Mecca. And then he came back when he kind of put all of this stuff together in his own mind, and he tried to convince the Jewish tribe that was living in Mecca that he was going to be the third and final prophet after Moses, Jesus, and now Muhammad. And he kept preaching to the Jews and preaching to the Jews, you got to believe me, and you know, I'm the last guy, and this is your one last chance. And finally, the Jewish community had enough and told him to get out of town. And in 610, he and his 12 buddies decided to flee to Medina. And that was about 200 miles north. The interesting part of that is in the Quran, there are actually passive verses. In the Quran and passive chapters. Those are the chapters that were written and transmitted during the 600 to 610 in Mecca. Those passages defined what he referred to as the faith. Then he gets to Medina and no more Mr. Nice Guy. Okay, you don't want to do it the nice way, now we're going to do it the hard way. So all of the other chapters and verses in the Quran, with all of the violence and the 109 chapters talking about killing non-Muslims, that all now has been written down in Medina. Well, he had a problem. And the problem was, how do we abrogate the violence verse or the peaceful verse with now a violent verse?
Yeah, it kind of counteracts everything he said prior.
Easy, because Allah, of course, can do all things. So if you go to book 2 and you go to verse 106, that is what is called the abrogation verse. And what book 2 verse 106 says, that was written in Medina, and it's also the second book in the Quran and the longest book, what it says is that we abrogate certain verses and replace them with better verses. Allah knows all.
That's convenient.
And so they point to that. So you've got roughly 20% of the Quran that was peaceful written in Medina, or that was written in Mecca, and then the other 80% comes out of Medina.
And the Mecca version is the one they always fall back on, that claim that Islam is a religion of peace. Just read it. It's right there.
Okay, so if you go, okay, they always cite this verse, book 2, verse 256. And that verse starts out, there is no compulsion in religion. But the problem is, as I have written before, you must read the verses that come before that and the verses that come after that. So let me explain the scam to you. Because I'll be honest with you, this is brilliant. This is brilliant. Whoever put this thing together really tried to think about anything in the future that might come up. So all these questions, they wind up getting answered. So Muslims will come out and they'll say, no, there is no compulsion in religion. Well, here's the deal. The Quran and the Hadith require a good Muslim to travel and migrate from Dar al-Islam, or in Arabic, the land where Islam rules, to Dar al-Harb, or the land of conflict, where Islam does not rule. Now, America is Dar al-Harb. So what they do is they tell Muslims, okay, here's the deal. All right, Allah says that you must defend the right of Islam to proselytize. So when you come into Dar al-Harb and you encounter a non-believer, an infidel, and you try and convert that infidel to Islam, if they tell you they have no intention of converting, then you have the right to fight them in order to defend the right of Islam to proselytize, because Muslims can't afford for that infidel to begin spreading his repudiation of conversion to other infidels. So they've got to take them out one at a time. That makes Dar al-Harb free for the proselytizing of Islam.
And is that, that's what they're doing in Europe now as well.
Exactly, precisely. And the only reason that we don't see yet in America what is going on now in Europe is because two sides of our country are protected by large oceans.
Yeah,
but now you
can't
have
drive
Prime
here.
Minister of,
yeah.
You have the Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau, who is an apple who didn't fall far from the tree from his dad. And he is now accepted through the UN, the High Commissioner for Refugees, Antonio Guterres. He is accepting 900 Syrian refugees a day, each day, into Canada.
Lovely.
And we're sitting here watching the southern border. In the meantime, we have this infiltration coming from the northern border. This is a real problem.
No, it is
a
problem. And we're not screening these people coming from Canada?
Oh, no, we're not screening anybody.
Well, we're not screening anybody coming from anywhere. You could be falling from outer space, and we wouldn't even bat an eye.
Exactly.
Hey, we've got to take another quick break here. Somehow we have to fit this one in one more by the top of the hour. We were bad at the beginning. We'll do better next hour.
Thank God the land bridge melted a million years ago.
And you know they're not coming to Reading because it's 160 million degrees today. But we're only 2 miles from the sun, so it's not to be not really all that unusual. We're going to take a really quick break. We're going to come right back with Peter Friedman. We're talking about all sorts of things about Islam. His website is islamthreat.com. Loads of good information there, folks. And you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
I'll keep my freedom. I'll keep my guns. Try to keep my money and my religion, too. Try to keep on working. Try to keep on smiling. I will keep my Christian name, and y'all can keep the change.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation.
Nice.
Wasting time.
All right, Peter, we've got a question for you in the chat room here. These guys are
quick. Awesome.
If they would quit typing, then my screen would quit shifting. Okay. So one of our folks says, Ellison spokesman Rick somebody or other said that Keith is paying respect not only to the Founding Fathers' belief in religious freedom, but the Constitution itself. Ellison, who was originally told about the Quran from an anonymous letter, spoke to the Associated Press in a phone interview. He said that using Jefferson's Quran makes the point. It demonstrates that from the very beginning of our country, we had people who were visionary, who were religiously tolerant, who believed that knowledge and wisdom could be gleaned from any number of sources, including the Quran. A visionary like Thomas Jefferson was not afraid of a different belief system, Ellison said. This just shows that religious tolerance is the bedrock of our country, and religious differences are nothing to be afraid of. Yeah, so...
You want my one-word retort?
Isn't it two words?
Isn't crap.
I was thinking Bravo Sierra. Okay, yeah. Yeah, crap.
Yeah.
Crap, no, that's much shorter.
No, Ellison is another propagandist. He is absolutely another propagandist. He represents the Muslim enclave of Hamtramck and Dearborn, Michigan, which are two areas that are totally controlled by the Muslim community. They do not assimilate. They don't want to assimilate. It is all part of the civilization jihad. He's absolutely incorrect, and he's either propagandizing or he's really that ignorant. He's never read the book. So speaking of the book, let me respond this way. We're talking about terrorism, and what you put up on the website was my commentary on the psychology of Muslim atrocity. Yes. Let me read you a couple of verses directly from the Quran, because people say that, especially Obama, that this is a great religion hijacked by radicals. In fact, that ignorant George Bush said that on 9/12. And he said that Islam is one of the great religions. He stood right there at ground zero, and he said that the United States will never be at war with Islam, in spite of the fact that Islam has been at war with us, you know, for 1,400 years.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. We had an opportunity after 9/11 immediately to stop this, and we bought into it. We bought into it because of all of the campaign money that goes to everybody, including the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation. But you ought to take a look at the campaign funds from Islamic unindicted co-conspirators and the Holy Land Foundation prosecution 8 years ago that have gone into the campaign funds, for example, of Tim Kaine and Chris Christie. Look it up. It's all there. All people have to do is get off their duff and do a little research, and you will discover how much money has come from the Islamic community and the Muslim Brotherhood organizations in the United States and outside the United States, which is absolutely illegal. All of that money that came in from half a dozen foreign Middle East governments in the Middle East to the Clinton Foundation, which is absolutely illegal, absolutely illegal. So let's take a look at a couple of things here, because people hold up, for example, the Jordanian pilot that was caged and doused with kerosene and then set on fire. Well, that's not Islam. Islam doesn't teach that. Oh, yes, it does. I will read the exact verse to you. Things like drowning these people in the cages, cutting heads off. Absolutely. Book 8, verse 12, amongst other ones, 47.74. It's all there. Read the book. And every time I do this with a presentation, somebody says, well, isn't there a problem trying to translate Arabic into English? Here's the response. And I always say to them, you know all these suicide bombers going on around the world? Yeah, are they reading the Quran in English or Arabic? And that shuts that conversation down right now.
You mean they're not reading it in English?
In England and America, they're reading it in English. You know, if you go on my website and you look, excuse me, if you look at the original English translation from 1734 by George Sale, you compare that to the Pickthall translation, the Yusuf Ali translation, the Shakir translation, they're all the same. So you would think in the last 260 years, if there was a problem translating it from Arabic into English, somebody would have said something. But the Muslim clerics don't. And I'll get to that in a minute, because I'm going to read from you from an Islamic textbook that is used in the Islamic schools in the United States, in the mosques, for kids that are 14 to 16 years old, and your hair is going to stand up. So, reading directly from the Quran, for example, Book 3, verse 151, and I quote, "We will cast terror into the hearts of those who disbelieve. Their abode is the fire, and evil is the abode of the unjust." The word terror is right there. Translates perfectly from the Arabic. Let's see. How about Book 4? Well, let's go to Book 12. Verse 12, "I will cast terror into the hearts of those who disbelieve, therefore strike off their heads." It's all right there. Book 8, verse 39, "Fight with them," that's us, "until there is no more persecution, and religion should be only for Allah." You see what the end game is?
Yeah.
No more Christianity, no more Judaism. The world must succumb and submit to Islam in the end. Let's see. Book 9, verse 73. "Strive hard against the unbelievers and the hypocrites and be unyielding to them. And their abode is hell and evil is the destination." Then you go into the hadith. And you go into the hadith of Bukhari, for example. 90% of all of the sayings of Muhammad are codified in Bukhari's hadith.
Volume 4, Book 52, verse number 177. Allah's apostle said, that's Muhammad, quote, the hour will not be established until you fight with the Jews, and the stone behind which a Jew will be hiding will say, O Muslim, there is a Jew hiding behind me, so come and kill him. Volume 4, Book 52, number 220. Muhammad said, quote, I have been sent with the shortest expressions, bearing the widest meanings, and I have made victorious with terror, unquote. It's replete. All through all Islamic literature, I don't care whether it's Sharia, it doesn't make any difference. So, and what's interesting is in Bukhari, there is Book 56, which is entitled The Book of Jihad. And what happens is when you talk to a Muslim, this is more propaganda, they say, well, there are two types of jihad. There is the greater jihad and the lesser jihad. Really? What's the greater jihad? Well, that is the struggle for a Muslim soul. Uh-huh. What's the lesser jihad? Oh, well, that's holy war. And my response always, I'm sitting here with a copy of Bukhari. I've got volume 4. I'm looking at it. Here's Book 56. It's called The Book of Jihad, Fighting for Allah's Cause, Holy War, Holy Fighting. How come in all of this literature there is no book of the greater jihad?
Yeah.
Interesting. There's no answer. There can be no answer. Okay, so I have in front of me right now Volume 4. It is a textbook that is used throughout the United States in the mosques, the Friday school for Muslims, not to be confused with Sunday school. And it's entitled A Guide for the Young Muslim, Book 4. And in here, this is for ages, and there's four volumes, and this is for ages, 14 or 16 to 18? No, this is 16 to 18. This is now when we get to be young jihadis. And it says in here, and I read on page 2, jihad means struggling and fighting against all evil powers from within and from without the community. The struggle against evil powers could be with arms when it's necessary, especially when these evil powers turn violent. This is what we're teaching young Muslims in America, in the mosque. The Abu Bakr, who is the guy who succeeded Muhammad when Muhammad died in 632, is quoted as saying, quote, no one of you should forsake jihad in the path of Allah. Any people who forsake jihad, Allah will strike with humiliation. This is in the textbook. This is what they're being taught.
So it's not exactly optional. Peter, we've got to take one more quick break here before the top of the hour, and we'll come right back. To let people know what we're going to chat about the second hour, you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. It's supposed to be a happy song, but in light of the topic, it's kind of scary. So, Peter, we've got about a minute and a half before the news cuts us off. So give folks some idea of what we're going to talk about in the second hour.
Well, what's always fun is to delve into Obama's Middle East connection, who paid for his education, and you know, the people that he's been involved with, especially the Saudis. And, you know, if you get my book, and chapter 5 is Obama's Middle East Connection, I'm going to send you a copy. Email me an address where to send it, and I'll do it tomorrow.
And then
and it's
can you hit some of the stuff on Tim Kaine? I just posted that on the website.
Oh, I've seen that, yes. A very good friend of mine is Dr. Carl Goldberg in Phoenix. And he has his website, which is Ideology Islam.
That's
very interesting. As a matter of fact, he just short story, he wound up like Pam Geller, who I know, and Steve Emerson and Robert Spencer, they all wound up on CARE's, you know, Islamophobe annual list. And they keep missing me. And I don't understand why. So, you know, Dr.
We'll see
Goldberg
if we can,
said, well, why don't
catapult
you
forward?
We're going to try to change that, if you don't mind.
Maybe this will finally do it. I did wind up. This is interesting. The Southern Poverty Law Center, which is a hate group into itself, they listed me in the Bay Area as one of the six Bay Area hate groups.
Nice. All by
and
yourself?
I had an independent, yeah, this cracks me up. I had an independent reporter named Ayafi.
All right, we gotta jump off. The news is gonna cut us off. We're talking with Peter Friedman. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.